Okay, so I always start by saying, it's Friday, like this. And then I say, my name is Alan O'Donoghue, and on Twitter, I'm Techno Teacher, T-E-K-N-O Teacher. And I record this podcast each week to try and give people, teachers mainly, some ideas about how they can introduce, make their lessons fun, engaging, inspiring, but all around computer science. And today I'm starting the podcast with Jill Hodges. Now, am I right in thinking you're the founder or the CEO of FireTech?
I'm the founder. I founded it about a year ago.
Okay. Now, I've read a little bit about what you've been doing, and the way I understood it was you're from the US?
I'm originally American. I've been in the UK for about 20 years.
And in the US, there's this whole culture about summer camps, and it's just sort of people just expect that, you know, children go to summer camps. And you were over here and you noticed that there weren't summer camps, and then there was this big push to, you know, give children the experience of coding and digital making.
Right.
And you've just gone ahead and done it.
Exactly. Well, you know, first of all, I was always looking for camps that were not necessarily sports oriented, because my kids are not terribly sporty, and I have a 10 and a 12 year old. And we had a really hard time finding things. There's some sports and some music, but besides that, there weren't many summer camps. So it was partly as a working mom looking for good enrichment activities, but also my nephews and nieces over in the States have lots of opportunities to be exposed to tech. And over here, I couldn't find anything for my kids. So I just decided to start it up.
But around London, I mean, I bring my children to London from time to time. I have noticed that there are lots of activities for children in museums and galleries and this sort of thing. But what we're talking about here is we're talking about specifically technology-based camps.
Well, there's fewer than you would expect for where you can actually leave your kids to start
with. Oh, yes,
with.
Of course.
And second of all, specifically what I'm doing is all tech.
So do you think that's important that people can leave their kids there?
I think working parents are really looking for good activities for their kids to do while they have to go to work, and the kids have lots of vacation during the year and in the summer.
So there's a different... Should we stay here or should we go inside? It's up to you.
Yeah. They're working in there.
Okay.
I was just trying to find a quiet spot. We can just stay here if that's okay.
So the difference that I've just been around, you just showed me, and there's four classes right at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's four groups.
Yep.
There's one group we've just seen where they're doing robotics with Genevieve Smith-Nunes.
Right.
And she's Peg Leggin on Twitter.
Yeah.
And we just had a look. You showed me there was a Python class.
Right.
And they were all sat around computers and they're learning to... For some of them, it could be their first experience programming in a text-based programming language.
Right.
And then they're going to graduate onto controlling the main Minecraft using the Python API.
That's right.
And then upstairs, you've got two groups, and they're designing computer games. And they're going to go on to use things like Game Salad to realize those ideas.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things...
And we have mobile app design as well.
Oh, yes, of course, using tools like AppShed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things... It's been fascinating having a look around, because we're doing some similar activities, but in some ways they're very different, because what we're actually trying to do is we're running our activities at weekends.
Right.
And we're encouraging parents to come as well. So we're saying it's about mums and sons, dads and daughters all coming and building together. Because, I don't know, I've kind of got this traditional idea that a child learns something, they take it home, and... But if they take it home with a parent, then it's like a hobby or it's an interest that they can develop together.
Right.
And I love the idea that you're doing, which you're using PhD students from Imperial University in London to help as tutors and to run these. And I've struggled a little bit recruiting students because, for a start, I didn't think about using PhD students.
Mm-hmm.
And but we haven't got a very... formal curriculum. I think you've got a more structured formal curriculum here.
Yeah.
And the sessions that we're running, we put a menu out each day and we say, here are the things that we can do today. And is there anything that you feel should be on the menu? And then the children will say, what about this new Python API for Minecraft? Can we do that?
Right.
Oh, great. Yeah, let's do that. And we sit down and we agree and then we go off and we do it together.
Yep.
But I can certainly see how parents who are busy and have to work during the holidays, would really appeal to them.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at different formats. So we're looking we're going to start running weekend courses just for kids, probably 12 or 14 and up for Python and for Java. So we're going to run weekend courses for that pretty soon. And we're also looking at doing some parent and child activities together.
Together, yes.
We're working with one of the major museums to put something together where parents and kids would be working together, because we agree that it's great once the parents know it,
that's
then they can support each other. But I think there's lots of different formats and there's lots of demand for different formats. But we do have, like, we have curriculum for our different units. And those, you know, we continue to develop and refine those. But the idea is that we would be able to deliver those in different places, in different kinds of formats. And the kids would sort of have finished a certain amount of work by the end of the week.
So the main audience of this podcast are teachers. Mm-hmm. Do you think the teachers should be thinking, well, if they're teaching these in these summer camps, then I don't need to be teaching these in my class? Or do you feel that you're replacing with these camps some of that
activity? I think that extracurriculars, I think technology really lends itself to extracurriculars, because sure, there's so many different things that you can do, and so much of it you're never going to be able to cover in the class, whether it's because it's going to be quite hard to justify getting sort of able to download Game Salad and work on video games in class or whatever. So a lot of the things that we do are things that you wouldn't do in class, but they give kids some excitement and some momentum and a finished project at the end of the week. So whereas classes are working on, you know, an hour a week, chipping away at something, we're able to get kids through a whole project during the week, and we try to get them really excited so they have like a slick product at the end of the week that they can.
That was
really
one of the things I noticed
about
in the robotics class we went into. There was a very high sort of adult to child ratio in there, and one of the things about robotics is it can be very time intensive, and you know, if you've got a 1 hour session, by the time you've got all the kit out and ready and switched on, oh, there's the bell, it's time to put it away again.
All of the things we do, I would find it hard to do in 1 hour increments, because for example, in the video games, today's the first day of a video games class, and so we have kids doing storyboarding, we have them doing assets where they're actually creating their graphics and starting their games, and to do only an hour of that, they wouldn't get that same kind of momentum. So I think this is something that's very complementary to schools. We have been invited by a number of schools to come in and do some in-school provision. So when schools have an off-curriculum week or some other kinds of times when they have special workshops, sort of enrichment-style workshops for kids, we may be going in delivering a few things inside the schools and bringing the teachers in for that and help, you know, running alongside with the teachers and training up the teachers and things as well. But that's something that we, are thinking about delivering.
If somebody wanted to find out more about FireTech, is it firetechcamp.com?
It's firetechcamp.com. And my email is Jill with a J at firetechcamp.com. And people are very welcome to get in touch, and I can send out flyers and talk to you and tell you what we're doing.
I've seen it's a very slick site there where you've got all your classes listed on there and how people can find out more about them.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, Jill, thank you very much.
Great.
So I'm at the Museum of Science and Industry in Manchester, and not in London anymore. That was an interview I just had with Jill Hodges. And a train has just gone past. But there's a different type of technology here in this room I'm walking into. And I'm here with, is it Tom MacPherson Pope?
Yep.
And Andrew Robinson?
Yep, hi.
And you're all part of the PyFace team. Well, you're the developer behind PyFace. So what are you doing here at the museum today?
So we're here as part of Manchester Science Week and part of the Science Festival for the Science Platform, and we're showing people Raspberry Pi. So we've got a few things here. We've got the what I like to call Frozen Pi or Bullet Time, which is a whole set of Raspberry Pis with a new control and display PyFace interface on. And we've also got a whole bank of cameras, and they all are synchronised. They take a picture, and as it spins round, you can create Matrix-style bullet time effects.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't bullet time what the effect that they use to describe, the word they use to describe the effect you see in the Matrix?
Yes.
Where there's like a fight scene going on, and then the camera appears to swivel around.
Yeah, Neo's dodging bullets.
That's it.
And he freezes, and then it goes around.
So the camera doesn't actually move?
No.
So how have you created this then?
So we've got, here we've got 24 cameras all in a ring, and it takes a picture at the same time. And so if you go through those, it's like a stop motion, but because you're moving, then it looks like the camera.
So rather than have 24 frames that happen when they're taken sequentially, these cameras all work in parallel.
Yeah.
Okay. So you could actually have another 24. You could have a full circle.
We've got a full circle. We thought we'd demo the half circle.
Right, okay.
And then,
just to whet people's appetite.
Yeah.
So I'd like to try and get the rest of it and get a full circle going for the Manchester Jam, but Jam in November. So,
and that's two-dimensional.
And
then you're going to think maybe you could have a globe, couldn't you? Like a sphere.
Yeah.
There's also a plan to maybe turn the cameras outwards and use it as panoramic.
Okay.
And all sorts, and maybe 3D modelling as well. So,
right. So what else have we got? So that's in one corner over here. And then here's a giant Raspberry Pi with lots of illuminated switches next to it.
So yeah, this is the Raspberry Ripple, and it's about 6 foot high, giant Raspberry cutout, and then on all the black bits we've got buttons which are illuminated. And, they come on and go off, and when they come on, it's about hitting them as fast as you can. So you get it's a game really where you can see who's got the fastest reaction
right.
times.
It reminds me a little bit of Bat the Rat.
It's very similar.
Where the rat, yes, and it appears and you have to get there.
So
and
really, this is just a demo of what you can build. That's driven by two pie faces and a pie face rack behind it, so you can stack them. But just people can build something smaller. We've got next to it a shoebox that you know sort of is very homemade, okay. and you can build your own memory game or you can build your own whack the rap at home.
Now, there's a lot of teachers who are saying at the moment they don't really get what the Raspberry Pi is about. Like, it doesn't really seem to do anything that a normal computer doesn't use. Have you ever tried building some of these kind of projects with a PC?
I suppose, I mean, if you've got the bullet time or the frozen Raspberry, to have 48 PCs all driving cameras right. would just be prohibitively expensive, and also just power requirements would be too much.
But could you
not
just have one computer that makes 24 cameras
Quite difficult to control that because we've actually networked them all, so to synchronise it, we're using the network, and then we're getting the data back over it as well. So doing that, I don't know how you do that with one PC, and nobody's, webcams have been around for a while, and I've not seen anybody do that.
But then another sort of sceptical viewpoint might be to say, well, okay, it's very nice looking at this kind of thing, but there's no way I'd ever get something like that to work in my classroom. Tom, are you a student at the moment?
I just graduated this
right.
summer, so
okay.
I was, but I'm not.
A graduate of what?
Computer science.
Oh, okay. So the point I'm just saying now, which is a teacher might say, well, yeah, it looks very impressive, but I could never actually get a class to build something like that, because I'd have to have 30 of these in my classroom. Do you think that's a valid viewpoint?
I mean, they're going to have maybe 30 Raspberry Pis in their classroom anyway, if things go ahead the way they should do.
Sure.
So, and then maybe they have the cameras as well, and so it's about what they've already got rather than what they need to finish it off. Kind of thing. But maybe not a full rig, but like we say, we've got a half rig here,
right.
they could have a quarter rig, and just get the idea of how it works, and also how to set it up, which is going to be, doesn't matter whether it's like 3 or 48.
Right. One of the things I'm thinking about is in certain sports, there's sometimes a bit of disagreement because it goes on the referee's viewpoint, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Where the referee was standing when the decision was made, and you could actually, in a way, I suppose, build something that maybe around a wicket or a goal that would take...
In baseball recently, I've noticed that they're using a similar bullet time technique to when the pitcher pitches, and then they come around the ball to the batsman.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's being used in sport quite a lot.
It's two things. I think the rig we've got here it's definitely an attention drag grabber, and people are engaged by it. So you've got their interest, and then you can show them how they could build something simpler. So we've got instructions on how they can build a bullet time thing, they can do time lapse. So instead of slowing time down, they can speed it up. And that you only need one camera, one Raspberry Pi, and then if you use the control and display interface on top, you can get nice, easy to use menu. It's just an introduction to programming, and then you can put that in your window and then take a picture of the sunrise or the sunset and that sort of thing. So it's the creative element of showing people that computers is not just about dull programming, it's about fun, it's about doing sort of graphical things.
So while in a class of say 30, you won't necessarily have every child would build something like this, but you're showing them the potential of what could be achieved or realised,
and then they could go off and build something simpler themselves. Yeah.
Now, am I right in thinking you've just had a book published as well?
The book is imminent, Raspberry Pi Project, so that's got things like the reaction time, which is the basis for the Raspberry Ripple and various other.
And how would people find out about that book?
So that is available through Amazon, Waterstones and all good booksellers, as they say.
Okay, and it's called Raspberry Pi.
It's called Raspberry Pi Projects. It's also written with Mike Cook, who's a really good guy who's written some of the tutorials for the BBC Micro. So, he's a well-established author. And it's basically a lot of fun projects, which fundamentally it's about building the project, which is fun. But then along the way, you'll learn various bits of computer science, which you can then use to extend it and make the project your own.
Now, I'm really glad that you said you're going to be able to come to the Raspberry Jamboree, which we're having over 4 days, this festival, in February, the 27th, the 28th, and the 1st and 2nd of March. Is there anything like this that you're likely to bring along? Are you going to talk about at the Jamboree?
I would love to bring this along. So if you'll have us, then we'll bring the bullet time rig, and then people can come and bring something like juggling, and we'll try and get people freezing the actions of the juggling balls in midair.
And then I've got a final question for Tom. So You've just completed a 3-year degree course at the University of Manchester, and the Raspberry Pi didn't exist beforehand, before you started the course.
Yeah.
What kind of things was it that got you excited or interested in computer science in a world without Raspberry Pi?
Oh, it's difficult. I guess with most people on my course, I found that people got interested through web development and then looked at how other things work in computing. But I think before Raspberry Pi, Arduino was a good way to get people interested in programming.
So what do you hope to do with your degree now?
I'm not sure. At the moment, I'm working with Andrew on PyFace. See what the future holds for everyone.
And PyFace, that's the interface board.
So it's a range of interface boards. So we've got the original PyFace Digital, which allows you to connect the switches and the lights. That's driving the Raspberry Ripple. And then we've got Control and Display, which is just a really easy way of, you don't need a keyboard. So you can then start putting the Raspberry Pi out in the wild or out, you know, away from your desk, which I think is really exciting.
And it's spelled PyFace, P-I-F-A-C-E.
Yeah.
Andrew Robinson, Tom McPherson, Hope.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So it's Friday the seventh? The ninth. Friday the ninth
eighth,
of no
eighth.
The eighth.
Good start.
I'm all over the place really. And not just in the world, but in my head I keep feeling it's like Saturday today, but
because
it's Friday.
It's the weekend, yeah.
So we're here in Dubai at the Dubai English Speaking College, and it's the morning of TechFest. And I'm sat here with two other teachers, Karen and Melissa. Karen, where do you teach?
Doha College Primary.
Doha?
Qatar.
Is that a bit of a distance from here?
Yes, about an hour away flying.
Arrived yesterday. So you've flown in last night.
Yep.
Okay, and Melissa, you've...
I'm Doha College of Wellbutt Secondary School.
Right. So you're more than an hour away, but you've flown here.
Yeah.
Why would you come to Dubai on a Friday morning when you could be at home swimming in the pool or something? Why would you do that?
Well, Alan, I saw you. I came on a training course in the summer, and I was inspired by you. And so, when you told me that you were coming here, I really wanted to be here to learn more and learn more from other people and on the Tech Fest while we're here.
And what kind of things are you looking forward to today? Because we've got some speakers, we've got some workshops. Are there certain things that you see that you're looking forward to?
Well, our school has just started with the iPads over the last this year, with three year groups in the secondary and one year group in the primary. So there's a speaker on iPads and things, and just generally sort of speaking to the teachers, especially on the course the other day, meeting other ICT professionals, and also the Raspberry Pi. Mm-hmm. I want to know more about the Raspberry Pi and get hours working and take them out of the box.
Have you seen iPads transform people's teaching or learning?
Not as yet.
Yeah, you're waiting for that
to happen.
I
haven't really had a chance to go into many lessons to see that. But that's what I want. I want to get ideas. But being an ICT teacher, it's difficult because we already had computers. So how do we integrate iPads into the teaching of other computing? I've used them as like mini quizzes for starters and plenaries. But I haven't really used them for much else in my lessons yet. So again, to try and get some ideas.
And Karen, in the UK at the moment, there's this big drive towards teaching computing in schools and in the curriculum, and from September 2014. Do you feel that there might be an obsession on secondary school and that primary schools might get left out of this?
No, I think we've got to make the effort to involve the primary schools, and this is the sort of thing that we need to take the opportunity to come to events like this and see what they're doing. And obviously we're a shared site, so we can share resources, which is very useful, because and share knowledge as well. So I think it's hopefully...
Do you think that there's any value though in trying to show, you know, a 5-year-old or an 8-year-old, say, something like what an algorithm is or how to write a program or problem solving? Can you see any value in that, or are you you're waiting to see?
In terms of more complex stuff, there's always ways you can water things down in order for them to understand.
Yeah, I mean, we have done that sort of thing for years with the BeeBots and the Roma robots, and it's just extending that further, really. And kind of, I've done scratch animation for a number of years now with primary students, and you know, it's amazing how quickly they pick those sort of things up. And I just think we need to develop those skills further. So
you've just got to give them the chance, really.
Yeah, that's right.
Who knows what they can do?
Well, I wish you both a very good day, and I hope you get lots out of it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay,
bye.
So now I've moved to talk to another teacher, and you actually work at Dubai English Speaking College.
Yes,
here. Yes.
I'm one of the assistant heads, Andrew Tkachuk, and I've brought my two sons to come and look at this whole session.
they're mad on gaming, etc., especially Minecraft and stuff like that. So,
would you classify yourself as a nerd or a geek?
Actually, no, I wouldn't.
No. And is it that you struggle to see the value of technology, or?
It's not that I don't see the value of it. I do see the value of it. It's just that someone of my age and generation, we didn't have it at that time. But in the last 5 years, I've moved on a lot and got an iPad, an iPhone, etc. And I wouldn't be without them now, because in this day and age, you can't get on without them.
So do you think that technology should be made as easy as possible so it's accessible for everybody?
Yes, it needs to be, how can I phrase it politely, idiot-proof, user-friendly, so that it is very straightforward and logical.
So do you wonder then if there's a danger if it's too much, you know, teaching children how to code and how to build things, that some people will see that as a barrier to...
No, because if they're taught that and they're brought up doing that, then that will become the norm. And all that needs to happen is this just needs to be built up over time. Because as I go back to what I said a minute ago, when I was at school, we didn't have anything like this, and so therefore that's why people in my generation find it more difficult. But if at school they're being taught all this, then for them it will become the norm. And so therefore...
So today is Friday, which is the first day of your weekend
in
Dubai.
Yeah.
And you brought your children along. What value do you see in bringing the family along today?
Well, as soon as I mentioned the word that might be something to do with gaming and Minecraft, they both didn't really, you know, they just wanted to come, because that's what they're mad on at the moment. But it's just trying to show them what they can do and what's out there and what's available, because this is the way of the future.
And now talking more generally about the actual festival, I imagine the schools had to invest quite a lot of time and expense into this. What kind of return of that investment would you think the school would be looking to see from it?
Well, it's the first time we've done something like this, and I think the idea is to try and open ourselves up more to the community and just to try and, you know, see what we can all get from this, to learn from it, and then if it's successful, to maybe carry it on next year or do it biannually. But Chris Vizard, the deputy head, he's been the main driving force behind this.
Yeah, Mike, and, I'll probably go and have a chat with him.
I'll definitely have a chat with him. But the idea is just to open it up for as many people who want to come and see what's available.
And have you signed up for any particular workshops today? Is there certain ones?
I've signed up one of my sons for that very important Raspberry Pi
one.
My other son, he's going to the stop-start animations, and they're both going to the remote roboting club as well. Okay. So they're looking forward to that.
Well, Andrew, have a great day.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Thanks, Alan.
So we've just reached the end of one of the Raspberry Pi sessions we've been doing today at the DESC TechFest. And I'm sat here with Amelia and Kristen and Marla. And Kristen, you're just going to explain to Marla what is that you've just created yourself?
I used the 3 lines of code that we were shown at the beginning.
In Python?
In Python. And I've carried on the conversation so that it looks like the computer system's being very intelligent by responding to my answers, but I've actually told it what it's going to say in response to my responses. So to make it a little bit more intelligent, we're adding a new piece of code where you're giving it a random reply. So we're giving it a statement that it likes to eat, and 3 options, burger, fries, and ice cream. And when we run the program, one time it'll say, I like burger, one time it'll say, I like ice cream, which will throw the conversation into a different direction.
Okay, so...
And then how do you bring it back then to...
Yeah. Well, I guess we combine the two so that you have to type something in response to that for it to give another prompt.
So if, for example, your program had one line that said, what's your favourite food? And you said pizza. It could say, my favourite food is pizza. If it always says that, no matter what you say, after a time when your user is using it, you're always going to get the same response. You get bored. Mm. But because we're introducing some random elements into it, you said it might appear more intelligent. I don't know if it'll appear intelligent, it'll just appear different, because you'll get a different response. You say, my favourite food is pizza, it says, oh, my favourite food is ice cream. Next time you do it, my favourite food is pizza, oh, my favourite food is pizza. But to make it more intelligent, you could get it to analyse the answer the person has given you, and then what do you think you'd do?
Give the conditions.
If they say the same thing, what would you get it to do?
I'll tell it the same.
Yeah, you can say like, oh, what Kelsey like, Breeze, yeah, you know, we like the same food. Okay. Is this your first time using a Raspberry Pi?
It is, yes. Yeah. I've seen them before, but it's the first time I've actually had a go at coding it.
And Marla, your first time?
First time as well. Yeah.
So what's your initial impression? Can you see it being useful at all in your classroom? Or?
Well, I have to say, we're using it already.
Right.
But I'm head of a technology department.
Okay. Design and technology. Or
technology in our curriculum covers computer technology and design and technology, but I'm a design and technology teacher. So we've got the gifted and talented students in a group. They are learning about Raspberry Pis, they're programming it, and then in DT we are building the cases for them.
Right, like with laser cutters and this kind of thing. And Marla, you teach in a primary school.
IT as well, yeah.
Do you see that the Raspberry Pi has a place in primary?
Ooh, not sure.
Not sure.
Not sure.
Which is the best answer, because you could be saying, I'm not sure yet, I haven't yet seen how.
Yeah, because I'm almost thinking that, do I really need the Pi? Because I'm at my primary level, I'm getting them to experience coding and programming. Yeah. So, I mean, I could just, you know, that's really quite nice for the kids as well, just getting to do a bit of Python, other than, like, I do Kodu and Scratch and things with the kids. So this is just to do an HTML.
It's like another weapon you can add to your artillery.
Yeah, sort of another experience for them and to understand what coding is about.
That's really good. I like the fact that you said that, because some people have come to these sessions and said, oh, I've heard so much stuff about the Raspberry Pi, I'm going to get a whole suite of them in my classroom. I say, why? I think it'd be great. You know, I think.
But as you said, you don't need.
That's right. Yeah. And it's about seeing that. It's like, you know, last year, everybody's saying, oh, we're going to get iPads. Now we bought a lot of iPads. Now we're buying a lot of Raspberry Pis. Why? Because it's like, because everybody else is doing it, but is that the best?
Yeah, I think from our perspective for primary, it's more like experience with coding and programming. So it just depends, you know, a range of
exactly
to do that. Yeah.
And would you say just gifted and talented children should be using the Raspberry Pi?
No, for us it's our way of allowing us to purchase it for the school as an introduction. And when they see what it can do, then we can have it in our curriculum.
But I would say it's for everybody, in fact, the ones who are struggling otherwise.
Exactly,
this is like an amazing opportunity to, you know, prove, because they don't have to. It's all like...
Thank you for sharing some thoughts about the Raspberry Pi and Python and programming and all that kind of thing. So that previous interview was recorded at the Dubai English Speaking College Tech Fest, which was on Friday the... Was it the 6th, 7th? Oh my goodness, I don't know where I'm up to with my dates at the moment. So what happened was we then had a presentation from Ian Livingston, who was talking to us about the importance of... allowing everybody to experience what it is to code, to build things, to enable people to create and interact with the world around them. Shortly after that, my duty in the day was running a Raspberry Jam upstairs, so we had, throughout the day, we had a number of sessions where people came in to discover what a Raspberry Pi is, and still surprised that a lot of people have heard of it but don't actually know what it is. So I run a series of one-hour workshops throughout the day, and we had a number of different activities. So we had, like, one was called Sabotage, and in Sabotage what happens is we start off by agreeing what is it that you need for the Raspberry Pi to work. Things like display, power, operating system, and inputs like keyboard and mouse. And then what they had to do was they had to do one thing that would stop their Raspberry Pi from working, and then swap groups, while the other group then would try and get their Raspberry Pi set up and working. So it gave them it was about helping people understand that computers don't always just work straight away, and you have to try and work through all the different options to find out what is it that you need to do to make that computer work. We also had discussions around what is a Raspberry Pi and why is it that people are buying it. And there was still a lot of confusion. People were thinking it was an alternative to the iPad, and it was going to transform what they're doing, and it can do if you really understand the potential of it. We also tried some other activities. So, for example, we played, hacked, and shared with some games in Scratch. So we took games like the Marble Racer, which is not the best game in Scratch. So we thought about what could we do to change and improve the game. And then another thing we tried was we tried some text-based programming with Celebrity Chat Roulette in Python, and we were able to make the computer appear to be Elvis or Harry Styles or Barack Obama and have conversations with the computer. So flying back to the UK this afternoon, but it's been a fantastic week here in Dubai. You've been listening to the Techno Teacher me, Alan O'Donoghue, and this podcast, if you like it, you can find it in iTunes. You just type in Techno Teacher, T-E-K-N-O, Teacher. And it's time to say goodbye.